News of KCAA, 1050 AM, 102.3 FM, and 106.5 FM, located in Southern California and in parallel with Turfs Up Radio Studio in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And you can find them at turfsradio.com. Thanks for tuning into The Water Zone today. I'm your host, Rob Starr, along with Mr. Chris Davies, our other host, who happens to be 3,000 miles away out in sunny, hot, wonderful Florida. Hi, Chris.
Hey, Rob, how are you today? I'm glad to be. Glad I was able to make it on. So, Turf Stop Radio in Fort Lauderdale. I'm literally, 50 miles north of that in West Palm Beach.
Oh, excellent, excellent, excellent. So, how's your trip going? You're all concluded and so, ready to
sure.
Come home?
So it's yeah, pretty much yeah. So yeah, I'll do that later on here in the morning tomorrow. But it was the Sports Turf Managers Association show and conference. So all of the Major League and NFL, Soccer League, major teams were there for their sites and their field for irrigation and care and everything else. So, yeah, great show.
Did you get any free tickets?
I did not get any free tickets to any of the events, probably because I'm not staying here long enough.
Oh, no, I meant to the football games and the baseball games.
No, I did not. Where were you when I needed you?
You have a press pass. Use it.
yeah, I do, and I have it with me, too. So.
Well, that's good. That's good. So, supposed to be raining here this afternoon, which I haven't seen yet. They said it's going to rain tonight as well, but again, it's as of this hour here, it is not wet.
Still dry, huh?
Very dry, very dry. So we have a great show tonight. We have Miss Chris Austin from the Maven's Notebook, and then we have another gentleman coming on the show, Mr. Nick Schneider, and he's with Mojave Desert Water. And so it should be a good show, and let's just get started here. I'd like to bring on Miss Chris Austin, the purveyor of Maven's Notebook.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
We'd be fine.
Hey, good to hear. Yeah. Hey, we're going to get some rain tonight, so they tell us, right?
That's what they say. They've been saying that
for
the whole
week. Isn't that great? But, I mean, hopefully it comes and it's a good year. Although, the models and indications are that we're going to end up below average, so we'll see what we end up with come April 1st. But we'll cross our fingers, right, and we'll enjoy the rain and the snow as it comes.
Well, they say they were going to shut down the grapevine tonight because of snow when it comes. But, again, I haven't heard or seen or any of that yet, so maybe it'll come later.
Well, out here in Santa Clarita, we're already starting to see some sprinkles, and the temperatures are kind of cold. Mm. It's amazing. There's been more closures on the grapevine, I think, this year than I can remember in some time. I mean, they were closed 40 hours over Christmas.
Wow. Chris, what's the temperature in Florida today?
Right now, buddy, it's 82. I hate to say it.
Yeah, well, we're less than half that out here in Santa Clarita, so we'll see what happens.
And I bet you Chris didn't bring his bathing suit there to Florida.
I know. I didn't have enough time to do it, but it's beautiful. It's just absolutely gorgeous outside right now. And no cloud in the sky, nice dark night, so you see the stars. Beautiful.
Oh. Excellent.
Can you see the Burmese pythons and the alligators too?
Just on the other side of I-95. I can tell you they're there.
Hey, I'm going to let you all in on a little secret. I've been working over the holidays to rebuild Maven's Notebook. So I have a whole new website that's going to launch on Monday. Well, a whole new look to the website, I should say. All the same stuff there, all the, all the same content, the structure's mostly the same. It's just a updated look and updated software and updated this and that. And you know what the best thing about my new website is?
Hmm.
There's a link to the Water Zone.
Ah.
Woo! Yeah.
And we can tell you that on our new upcoming website, guess who's going to be featured on that? Maven's Notebook.
Well, it ain't that great. So, come Monday, I'm going to do this Sunday night. My web guy who, I have this great web guy. He's not only is he a web developer, but he also owns a jiu-jitsu studio.
Oh.
So there's something I like about this, about like the jiu-jitsu guy sort of whipping my websites into shape. But, this redo I did myself because I can do Maven's Notebook. It's amazing how far they have come with website development.
Yep.
So this whole new look, I got to tell you guys, I did it for $59. Yes, $59 plus my time, but I've been having a great time with it.
Wow.
So, and it's updated and it's cool. It's got all kinds of bells and whistles and a link to the Water Zone. So, and and I haven't really announced this on the blog. I told them it's coming soon, but I haven't said when. So, hey, you and the listeners, y'all know now.
Absolutely.
Monday morning.
And those who want to subscribe to Maven's Notebook, please go to mavensnotebook.com. It's all tax deductible. It's a great place to get all the best news you can. What's happening here, at least in California.
Yeah, at least California.
And that's an important thing because things are happening like crazy here. For example, Newsom is starting our giant water tunnel project.
Yes, finally. You know, the Twin Tunnels, a.k.a. Cal Water Fix, you know, son of the Bay Delta Conservation Plan.
That's not going to be a single tunnel.
Yeah, that project was laid to rest, and the Newsom administration, they when he came in and said his State of the State speech back in, I think it was April, he said, it's not going to be two tunnels, it's only going to be one. And so that sort of put a lot of things on hold, at least out in the commentary world. It's kind of interesting because the people who are opposed to the twin tunnels still wanted to kind of keep their, you know, organization and their, you know, constituents energized, but it's hard to be energized when you don't have a project, you know.
Yep.
We're mad about that thing you're talking about. Oh, we're mad about that. I mean, it doesn't work.
Yep.
So finally, you know, we now have this, it's a notice of preparation to prepare an environmental document.
Right.
And they, you know, so far, I guess, I think they're looking at about, I can't remember now, I think 6,000 CFS tunnel, but they're going to look at all options. 6,000 CFS is less than half of the, well, no, I'm sorry, the twin tunnel project got changed so many times. It was, in the end, it became 9,000 CFS, so 6,000 CFS is two-thirds of that original twin tunnel capacity. So, but they're not committed to anything yet, so they say, until they look at all the different options. So there will be a series of scoping meetings across the state to happen next month in February. So if you are into Southern California water stuff, okay, it doesn't get any better than a Delta meeting in the Southern California. And there's one in February. I think it's the 5th in downtown L.A. I haven't totally scoured the list, but, you know, if you're into water and you're in Southern California, it doesn't get much better than this.
Yep, that's true.
I'm telling you. Although, you know, again, it's a public meeting, so it is, you know. But
bring the boxing
gloves.
It's
not like, it's not like the new Star Wars movie, but, you know, it has its charm in its own water wonky way.
I know you were talking about, you know, it's going to be below average and things, but I, you know, they said that 2019 was the hottest year on record for Earth, according to NASA and NOAA. And
yeah.
In recorded history, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, and so the effects keep marching on. Are wildfires an effect of climate change or not? There was a study out, did get a lot of press coverage, that actually said the wildfires aren't an impact of climate change. But, I mean, there's always debate over that. But certainly the warming temperatures are, and, you know, it's causing a lot of problems, you know, and continuing to, you know, a lot of natural disasters across the world, and Australia's burning and all kinds of things. So, you know, and I think that's why I think California water managers, and they've been pushing the state, and with Governor Brown especially, and I think a bit with Governor Newsom, they're really pushing this idea that we need to make some changes in the way we manage water in the state.
Mm-hmm.
Our snowpack, which has always been like our largest reservoir, isn't going to be there anymore. and we need to make some, you know, we need to make moves to accommodate that. And we need to be making those moves. You know, it takes 10 years to get a project designed and built in most cases, you know, even if you're done and ready to go to construction in 2 or 3 years, if you're building a dam, you still have, you know, 7 or 8 more years to go to actually move the dirt to get it there.
Right.
So with a lot of these projects, we can't sit and wait to see what happens. I had one guy that was saying, you know, so what if these climate, you know, all this climate change is wrong? What if it's wrong? It's like, well, it's never going to be wrong to prepare for drought.
Right.
There's never going to be wrong to be more efficient with your water, and not going to be wrong to, you know, have water in storage, because we've already seen in our deep drought back in the 2012 to 2016 how low our water supplies can go. So it's never going to be wrong to take these moves, whether or not you want to believe in climate change.
Right.
And if you even take climate change out of the fact, out of the, you know, consideration, we still have a growing population and a water system that was originally built and spec'd for half of the population we have in the state now. So it's never going to be wrong to update our water infrastructure, whether you believe in climate change or not. You know, that's the way I see it.
Yeah. That absolutely makes sense, Chris.
Well, I just know that the twin tunnel, or the single tunnel now, they said it's going to be, it would be completed in the 2030s somewhere.
Well, there, I mean, yeah, try and put a number on that. You know, whatever it is, it will certainly be litigated by some group. There's no doubt about that. And after they put up the notice yesterday, there were a number. I mean, the usual people were for it, and the usual people were against it. And there's no doubt that this is not going to be any more or any less controversial than the twin tunnels were. I mean, yes, they're looking at less capacity and 2 intakes instead of 3. But I mean, there are those people in the Delta who don't want to see any tunnel built, even if you strung draws together from the North Delta to the South Delta, they'd probably tell you that was too much.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there will always be those who will be disagreeing with the project, and so it's hard to put a date on it. And they still, you know, they're still trying to figure out which water agencies are going to participate or not. And they don't, I don't believe that they have 100% participation with all of the potential contractors that could be in it. And what's interesting, too, is, you know, where it was 9,000 and now maybe it's going to be 6,000. And so where do those extra 3,000, you know, CFS of water, where is it not going to go? Well, that's going to be not going to be going to agriculture in the Central Valley, who's dealing with trying to implement groundwater management plans and trying to keep their agricultural economy going. And, you know, they're going to want, I'm going to think somebody's going to want to try to figure out in the Central Valley how to buy into that project to get water that they need. I mean, you have all these groundwater agencies that are trying to figure out how to become sustainable. And what's really the key for all of these groundwater basins in the San Joaquin Valley, most of which are considered critically overdrafted, is all the extra water to recharge groundwater basins is north of the Delta. And if you can't move any of that extra water north of the Delta down to south of the Delta, which means you have to go across the Delta, and you would really, tunnels would be, a tunnel would be really helpful in doing that, then sustainability for groundwater in the San Joaquin Valley is really going to be well, the word will be challenging. You know, I mean, it's really going to be very challenging on a lot of levels.
Well, I was watching a PBS show the other night, or last week actually, and they had this lady on named Morgan Page, and I don't know if you've heard of her or what. I'd never heard of this term, a statistical seismologist, and she works for the U.S. Geological Survey, and she's going to come on the show in the first or second week of February, and she was talking about, like, all the dams that we have, when it gets filled, it puts a lot of pressure on the Earth's crust underneath, and it can also help generate or initiate earthquakes.
Yeah. With our big-ass snowpack in 2017, was it? They said that was causing earthquakes.
Yeah. So there's a whole science now behind this, and they're talking about that plus fracking and all this other things, because you're pumping the water in and doing all this pressure differential. So she's going to come on the show and talk about it. I thought it was really, really interesting, because when we think of that we need to have lots of water, we're also going to, it can also cause some serious damage with an earthquake. So everybody's got to weigh those things, and I didn't realize that until I saw this this show on television. It was really amazing.
There's also been reports, also Steve and Chris, that have opposed that, right? That because in dry areas, Southern California, for one, it's dry for many, many, many years. I mean, months, rather, in a year. The topsoil dries out, and then they think, well, we get, you know, 7 or 8, 10 inches of rain, adding all that weight across all of that geographic area. You know, doesn't that change the weights and balances, if you will, in the geologic scale that's in Southern California?
Yeah.
I don't know how much, if that has that much more impact than building a dam or a reservoir would have.
Well,
and you can't really do anything about that. I mean, you can't control the precipitation.
No.
I mean, we had all that you know, huge snowpack in 2017. We can't stop that.
No.
You know.
But also, when you start pumping all that water out of the ground that we store, then you got another issue with the subsidence and big holes.
Well, you know, and let's talk about other really odd issues. I'll tell you, I posted a story a couple of years ago, and I posted a story last week, and it always gets a lot of attention. It's the concept of what happens with sea level rise and what it does to coastal aquifers.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we always tend to think of sea level rise as you build a levee because the water's going to come up higher, which it does, and you need to build that levee perhaps. But there's this other thing that happens, which is, you know, all the water is connected. The aquifers are actually connected to the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And there's sort of this saline gradient thing that happens that sort of keeps them separate. And as the sea level rises, it puts more pressure on the groundwater, which pushes the groundwater table up. And this is what one of the things that's happening in Florida, and especially in the Miami-Dade area, where they have a lot of septic systems, and they're really starting to wonder or worry about what they're going to do when that groundwater table rises and makes all those septic systems much less effective. This is also a huge deal in the San Francisco Bay Area, which has a lot of low-lying areas with really relative shallow groundwater levels. And when these seas start rising, it's not just a matter of the levees, but it's going to destabilize roads. If you have utility vaults, they might get flooded. If they don't get flooded, you know, when you have an area, a void of space, you know, in the ground and the water comes up, things like pop up, like swimming pools if they're empty and utility vaults. And buildings, I mean, everything is engineered to move water away from the building, and it's not engineered to deal with things when the groundwater table rises.
Mm.
So, I mean, there's just some really interesting and really challenging things. Because at the end of this presentation, someone said, okay, wow, that's pretty big. What are we going to do about it? And they're like, well, nobody has yet started to figure out how they're going to deal with that problem.
Yeah.
So
I know a couple of years ago in India, when they had a bunch of rise in water, that it affected their cemeteries.
Yes.
And
and that happened too here, like in New Orleans.
Yeah.
I mean, the graves, when these cemeteries flood in these areas, and in New Orleans, a lot of the cemeteries were above ground anyways. I mean, they knew they couldn't put them in the ground, so they built them above ground. And then the flood comes and the caskets go they open up and burst. That is another really gnarly problem.
Yeah. It's always a challenge to come up with a corrective action. Because I always, in manufacturing production, I always sometimes get these corrective actions. We send something to a supplier and say, hey, this is the problem. And they come back immediately, here's our corrective action. And I always go, well, how do you validate the efficiency of your corrective action, since you haven't tried the fix yet, but you're telling us this is what's going to fix it? How do we know it really is going to work? And it's almost the same thing with water. I mean, for every action, it's like Newton's law, for every action there's an equal and opposite reaction in physics. But it's almost the same thing here. You know, we need a place to store water, and yet you store more water and you cause another problem. It's just a chain of reaction that just doesn't stop.
Yeah, and I wonder, what are we going to do about, like, low-lying areas in, San Francisco or in Miami-Dade or wherever those places might be? You think, well, maybe they can pump out, subsurface groundwater. Maybe you can install pumps in all the low-lying areas that pump that water out and dump it back into the bay or wherever. Although that water that's going to come out is probably going to be highly mineralized. I mean, we're not talking about groundwater aquifers used for municipal water supplies. This is just a low-lying a shallow groundwater table.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if something like that can be implemented and if it would work. But one thing it would do is it would certainly cost, because now you've got pumps and infrastructure. But then if your roads are degrading and your utility vaults and swimming pools are popping up and your buildings on slabs, construction have problems.
It's time to move.
Maybe it's worth it. I don't know.
Time to pack up and move.
I chuckle only because, I mean, these are just really horrendous problems. And I don't mean to chuckle like it's funny. It's just kind of like, oh, my word.
Yeah, it's hard to
believe. What are we going to do?
Yeah. Well, one of the last things I just want to touch on, maybe you can, is this, the Statue of the Estuary with the microplastics that they're finding all over the place.
You know, this is another thing, another big issue. They actually found they did this 3-year study in the San Francisco Bay looking at microplastics in the water, and found that the largest source of them were tire shreds.
Hmm.
Like, we all drive our cars all over the roads, and they're shedding little bits and pieces. And don't we know that, right? Because our tire treads wear down.
Right.
Where do we think that's going?
It's
breaking up into little teeny tiny pieces, and it's going into our water. And microplastics, they also come in from our laundry. I mean, they're just, like, all over the place. It's kind of like PFAS,
mm-hmm.
Which is the Teflon chemical. I mean, these are two things now that we have found that are just all over the place.
Yeah.
And so it's a concern of mine that we're really pulling back on the science to look at these things, because I don't think that these are the only two things, if we look closer, that we will find that are all over the place.
Yeah. Well, with new technologies, you never know until down the road, and then you find out you got problems with them. Just like the drugs they put out from the FDA approves drugs, and 8-10 years later, you find out you got some other disease coming from those things, or is hurting you in one way or another. But anyway, well, we're about to take our commercial breaks here for our wonderful sponsors. And Chris, we really appreciate you coming on the show. We will see you, we won't see you, but we'll talk to you. We have to get a webcam so we can put you on the video portion of our show.
Oh, no. my word. Then I'd actually have to do my hair. I'd have to get my roots done. Come on.
Well, we love you on the show. We appreciate it. And hopefully we'll talk to you again next week.
Okay. Take care, guys.
Okay. And Chris, are you hanging on? Or are you going to catch your flight? Or I guess he's out. So anyway,
he's out fighting the Burmese pythons and the alligators.
Absolutely. All right. Well, we're waiting for our next caller, Mr. Nick Schneider, and he should be calling in shortly. So right after the commercial, we'll go to him. So thanks, Vince, and we'll catch you in a few minutes.
It's time for NBC Radio News on KCAA Loma Linda, brought to you by Green Kong Dispensary, the Inland Empire's finest curated medical and recreational dispensary. Google GreenKong.com.
If you knew there was a pipe cement that works better than the one you're currently using, is better for you and the environment, and costs the same or less, would you buy it? Oh, no-brainer, right? Weldon, the trusted leader in solvent cements for over 60 years, is pleased to introduce a new line of solvent cements that does all that. Introducing the Eco Series line of solvent cements for PVC piping systems. Not only does it work great and set fast, it also has 30% lower solvent emissions and less smelly fumes. A better workplace environment when you're installing pipes. But don't just take our word for it. EcoSeries products are the only solvent cements that are Green Seal certified for environmental innovation for effective performance, improved working conditions, and for use with potable water. Now available in a medium-bodied fast-setting blue formula, 905 Eco, and a regular-bodied fast-setting clear formula, 900 Eco. Pick up a can today from your local distributor and see, smell, and feel the difference, just like Joe Sweat, president of Sunrise Irrigation, did. He said, after using Weldon's 905 Eco, we immediately noticed the application was smooth and there was noticeably less odor than other blue solvent cements on the market. The guys love it. To learn more about Eco solvent cements from Weldon, visit the website at www.weldon.com or call the technical service hotline at 877-477-8327. That's 877-477-8327.
Hey, Green Industry Pros, are you new to Turf Sup Radio and want to learn more? Then plug in your earphones and keep listening, because Turf Sup Radio invites you to listen while you work. Our 24/7 live radio platform keeps you up to date, bringing you new tips and interviews from pros like you who want to elevate and educate the green industry. Can't make it to industry shows or events? Don't worry, Turf Sup Radio will be there bringing you live coverage, getting you in on the action. So keep listening to Turf Sup Radio, your industry, your station.
Okay, thanks for joining us for the second half of the Water Zone, and I know we're having a good show today, and Mr. Chris Stavey had to go on mute because he's at the airport, and I guess there's a lot of people around him. I hope it's not TSA trying to search him for anything. So he's a good guy. I don't worry about him. He won't get in trouble. Anyway, we have our next guest on the show. He's a good friend of ours, and his name is Nick, and his formal name is Nicholas. I call him Nick Schneider. He currently serves as the Mojave Water Agency Water Conservation and Forecast Manager. And in his position, he assists retail water agencies and local partners in the development and promotion of water conservation programs and outreach. He also represents his agency on several statewide water conservation committees, and he helps develop policies to ensure reliable water supply. He also serves as the local small water system disadvantaged communities liaison. And Nick comes to the agency with 15 years of experience in the golf course and green industry. He's a smart guy. He's earned his Bachelor of Science degree in turfgrass science from Penn State University and his master's degree in environmental engineering from Cal State Fullerton. So welcome to the show, Nick.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
How's the weather up in the desert?
It's been windy and cold today.
No rain yet?
No rain yet. It's been really, really cold.
They said they're going to close the Grapevine tonight.
Oh, well, that's a little bit further west of me. We're the Cajon Pass that we have to worry about.
That's going to be safe. It wasn't 2 weeks ago when I went to Vegas. They closed it for a while, so it's pretty bad. So anyway, can you tell us a little about Mojave Desert Water?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, Mojave Water Agency, we've been around since 1960. We're a water wholesaler, so we don't connect directly to homes, but we connect to retail water agencies. And we're also a state water contractor, so we have a connection to the California Aqueduct. And some of our water supplies come from the California Aqueduct, but a majority of our water comes from the San Bernardino Mountains. We have a huge river that runs through our service area called the Mojave River, and it supplies about 60% of the amount of water that we need to survive on a yearly basis, and then the rest comes from reclaimed water and the state water project.
How many customers do you have, and what areas do you cover?
So our population base is about 500,000 people, and we have a really large service area. It's about 4,900 square miles. Our population center is the Victor Valley area, but we also cover the city of Barstow, and we also cover the Morongo Basin, which includes the Yucca Valley and just a little bit of the Joshua Tree area.
Wow, that's pretty large territory. And how, through the past drought that we had and up till today, how are you guys holding up for water?
Yeah, we actually did pretty good. We have a pretty sizable groundwater aquifer underneath us, and we've saved for the rainy day, or the non-rainy day, as we like to call it. We bank groundwater using a recharge system. So we actually bring that state water project water in when it's plentiful. We recharge it into the ground. We keep it in the ground, and then we use it when we need it.
Hmm. So you guys are comfortable into the future, I take it.
Yeah, we got a pretty good amount of water, but obviously we like to still promote the conservation. We don't ever want people to think that we have enough that we can, you know, turn the taps back on, because the only way we are the way we are and the way we have enough water is when people all come together and conserve enough water together.
Yeah. Well, you guys are great stewards of water management, and I know the meetings I've been with you and some of your other people, just incredible people, and you guys do have a passion and fire in your belly to make sure that what you guys are doing is correct and making the nice moves. You're pretty conservative in what you guys do, but I think you have a great record of water management, and you're not shutting anybody off, and that's an important thing. So this is now we're into the new year of 2020, but what are some of the highlights that you guys had done in 2019?
Yeah, so we had a pretty big year. We actually brought online a hydroelectric generator, an 820-kilowatt generator that's going to bring us into a net neutral status. And so actually, we're not producing carbon anymore, and all of our pumps, all of our systems are basically being run off of either solar panels or this hydro generator. We also received several grants, and we have this program, like I was mentioning earlier, called Regional Recharge and Recovery, and this is all tied in together. So our hydro generator is actually, as we recharge the water, it runs through our hydro generator, and then it recharges into the ground, and then down the line we recover that water out of it after it's been filtered through the earth, and we send it down the line and let our cities use it. So we have the city of Victorville, the city of Hesperia, the city of Apple Valley, and the city of Atlanta that kind of connect into that system and allow people to take water off that system.
So I know there's a water agency in Apple Valley. It's actually probably about a mile or two from your facilities. Are they you supply them the water as well?
Yeah, they have a connection onto our system. They don't use as much as other people do, but they do have a connection into our system.
Okay. Nice to know that. So for 2020, what's going to be the good thing you got going? I know there's a water summit coming up.
Yeah, it's our big event this year is our fifth annual water summit, and it's kind of our big huge start to the year, and we like to focus around this event because it really helps the young people in our community learn more about who we are and what the water industry is all about. We actually encourage about 300 local middle and high school students to come out and teach them about the water industry, tell them it's a great career opportunity. Unfortunately, right now, the water industry is struggling. We have what they call the silver tsunami going on, which is, you know, all the old people who have the knowledge that was out there as this institutional knowledge that's leaving all of these water agencies. So we need to get the young people in to allow them to pass that knowledge on to them and continue on with how strong we can be as water managers.
You know, I I participate along with your agency in the BIA San Bernardino Water Conference and such. And last year we talked about that same subject. And what's interesting to me is you're right. You know, people don't realize that, you know, water industry wasn't a glory place to work, or people didn't envision that that was, you know, high tech or anything like that, you know. And so they didn't even look into those positions. But they have some great paying positions, and they need a lot of help. I mean, there's going to be a lot of jobs opening. As you said, there's a lot of people who are into their senior part of their year, and they want to enjoy the rest of their life traveling or doing nothing and relaxing. But there's going to be a gigantic shortage of people, and there's tons of jobs available. I mean, even doing repairing and calibrating backflows, and even the water treatment plants, and or any of those things. And they don't realize that there are that many kind of jobs. I don't know. Do you guys participate with the American Water Works Association on any of those events that you help introduce people and younger people to this position? Because it can be a great job right out of school.
Yeah, we work with the AWWA. They're for our operators, they're a great resource, and lots of training available through them. And, you know, you focus on the outside work, but we also have people in all the different facets of employment. I mean, we have financial advisors, we have administrators, we have, you know, I work in an office, but we also have geologists and engineers. There's so many different people in this industry that need to be replaced, and there's going to be just this influx of job opportunities. And like you said, they are great paying jobs.
Yep. And I just think that it was never publicized well enough, and now it's getting to the point where, you know, I go to these meetings, and people I work with for the last X amount of years, they're not there anymore. They retired and move on, and they got to be replaced. So on this event that you're doing, you guys also want to award $5,000 in scholarships to high school students. How do they get chosen? Do you know?
So this is an essay contest that we run throughout our service area, and if, as long as you live within our service area and you're in the high school, you can apply. And this year we actually got twice as many as we ever have in the past. We got over 90 entries into our scholarship program, and we had to narrow it down to the top three. And so we actually have a finals where they will go in and present their essay to a panel of outside judges. So this is all... we don't do any of the judging, nothing here, no improprieties. We let the outside staff come in, and they will judge these essays, and then we award the winner a $3,000 scholarship, and then the two runners up will receive a $1,000 each.
Wow. That's good. I think it's a good thing to promote that with the STEM programs and things of that sort. I noticed that you guys also team up with the PBS show Curiosity Quest. Maybe you can inform some of our listeners what that is, and because we have listeners that, you know, our station covers all of where you are, plus they can pick it up on podcasts. But tell people what the Curiosity Quest team does.
Yeah, Curiosity Quest is actually a really fantastic show. It was designed to encourage young people to learn a little bit more about a thing. And so they'll tour around different factories, you know, kind of like a modern Marvels type of a scene where they will go out and they'll learn all about one different subject. Mm-hmm. And over the last 5 years or so, they've broken this down into something called problem solvers. And they'll come out, and we encourage our high school team and middle school teams to come out, and we give them a problem. And so this year's problem was to invent something. So instead of thinking through a problem, we actually wanted them to come up with the problem themselves, and then what's the solution to that problem? And, you know, we had full metal shops that were inventing new things for toilets, and we had apps being developed. We had just all kinds of different innovative ideas that these students wanted to put out into the atmosphere. And, you know, I'm over there taking notes because I'm looking to see if these are patented ideas already, because there are some really, really sharp ideas from these kids.
Oh, what happens if it's patentable? Do they get to get part of that, or?
You know what? We haven't. I guess we never did the legal on that. We let them own it. Last year it was pretty interesting. One of our teams was, instead of having a winter break, they were actually developing an environmental a company that they wanted to start after they got out of school. So, you know, we're changing lives.
Well, it's really great to see the young people and younger kids come up with ideas, and you'd be surprised how they view that and what angles they come from. It's not, you know, we're in the industry, so we kind of go over the same things all the time, but these people are out of the box, and that's a good thing. And we really need to get more people into this industry so they understand what the problems are and to solve it. I mean, there's so many new technologies coming up. There's a Global Waterworks Association and things that are back in Minnesota area and also out in Milwaukee. Those places help to spur education into younger kids, and we got to have that. You know, as you said, everybody's getting older and leaving in this industry, and it's getting scary because who's going to run the stuff?
It's one of the neat things we like to do is one of the things that young people nowadays, they want to make a difference. They want to change the world.
Yep.
And this is one of those events and one of those industries where they really can change the world, even though it may not feel like you can, because you're, you know, just going to work every day, but you're working with water, and water is so essential to life that
yep.
you really can change the world by taking one of these jobs.
Absolutely. So if you tell our audience, when is this event happening and can anybody else come, or how does that work?
So it is on February 14th. It'll be in Victorville, California. We do have some openings, but we like to keep it a little bit reserved for our students. If you would like to come, I can give you my contact information. I don't know how you want to dispel that out, but we'd be more than happy to take some RSVPs. We do have a pretty interesting keynote speaker. We secured Joaquin Esquivel, who is the chairman of the State Water Resource Control Board,
wow.
to come down and speak to all the students about what the state board is trying to do on these different issues. So that's kind of an interesting draw that we have, and we're really appreciative for him coming down.
Oh, yeah, you secured a biggie for that one.
Yeah.
So that's good. But your water agency is known for, setting trends and doing things that are a little bit outside the box. You know, your current leaders and your former leaders, general managers, have done a great job in moving forward with different projects and looking into the future, and that's what we need. We got to solve these problems. I know we were just talking a little bit on the last segment. We're going to have a lady on who's a statistical seismologist, and I saw her on a PBS show, and I won't go repeat the whole thing, but it's amazing, you know, when they talk about, hey, let's build a big dam and stuff it with water. Well, doing that causes problems on the Earth's crust, and it can cause earthquakes. And I didn't know that until, and it made sense after I watched the show. But all these things that can happen, you know, we see... In Southern California, I'm guessing 80 to 90% of the water when it rains goes right out to the ocean. We need to find ways to do something about that, to collect the water, to recharge the earth, to store water. I don't have all the answers. I have some ideas of what I think should be done, but that's just me. Where do you see, as an individual, and I won't put you on the spot for your agency, but for an individual, where do you see the future of water in the United, well, in your area, and then the United States, and then world?
Yeah, you know, it's all going to be efficiency programs. You know, we use water really well, but we can always do better. And I think that comes basically from reclaiming the water that we're using. You know, a couple of years ago, same problem solvers. Our theme was how to use a drop of water more than once. And you know, it could be as simple as a gray water system, or it could be as simple as you're actually retreating this water and using it, you know, to re-drink. And there's some water agencies who are doing some remarkable things with the, you know, the direct potable reuse.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's going to be the future is this direct potable reuse.
I know home builders, for example, and I know you're involved in some of the things that I do with the Building Industry Association. I know they're really big on WaterSense products, you know, like Kohlers and Delta and, you know, WeatherSmart controllers and such. But I don't see a lot of gray water use. No, it's just like the purple pipes they put in cities and things. You know, they're not going to rip up the streets and add that to the rest of the water systems that are there. It's cost too much money. But putting gray water systems when they build the home, I think, is a smart idea. You know, San Francisco, we had a lady on from San Francisco Water who was telling us that all the new buildings, the big commercial buildings, have to put in a system, design and put in a system that recycles water. Now, I don't think there's a whole lot of builders that are putting in gray water systems in their house, in their homes that they build. And do you see that as, because I know you say you only have to use, and again, this is your own opinion, of using water more than once. Do you see that that would ever catch on for new buildings coming down the road, or is that something you think is going to take a while to get traction going?
I would say it's going to take a while to get some traction going. It's definitely the innovative thing that needs to happen. You know, you talked about purple pipes in the ground and ripping up the roads. You know, the only time that's happening is when you're planning a whole community,
right?
And you have the ability to do that firsthand, and that is happening. You know, you're dual plumbing a house, but I think if you're interbuilding a house within other homes, there's no way that you can bring that second pipeline through. And that's just the only way. So I don't know how you get that message out to the builders or the consumers, but it's definitely the right way to go with adding in a gray water system before you build the house or as you're building the house.
Yeah, there's not much choice. I was talking to a water agency. We went up and made a presentation. They were asking our about our technology and our help about things like that. And they said, you know, if the house is already built, it's going to cost you an arm and a leg to rip that house apart to put pipes in. I said, you know, they were talking about from the sinks to the dishwasher to the toilets. And I said, you practically build a new home by the time you spend the money to pipe it. You're right. It has to go in at the beginning. I know there was a company, I don't think they're in business anymore, called Nexus Water. And they claimed that they had put in 60 homes as they started building it. They worked with Kaufman and Broad, or KB Homes, I guess what they're called today, and now they're out of business. So I don't know, I don't know if it was successful or how that came to be. I know there was a big, I'll use the word splash about it when they came out a couple of years ago, but you're right. I need to see those kind of things thoughtful up in front. You know, they talk about LEED buildings. They talk about the National Association of Home Builders, their water efficiency plans and things of that. But yet I don't see any of those things putting that up front. And I'm just surprised. I don't know. To me, I compare us to Israel. And Israel is like leap years ahead of the United States on technology about how to reuse water and what to do. I hear people talking about it, but is it because we have, in your opinion, do you think there's too many regulations that you have to go, all the hoops you have to jump through just to go get something like that done? I know it took 17 years to do
that.
It took 17 years to do the Carlsbad desal plant. 17 years.
Yeah.
You know, the building of it was.
Certain areas, they have different regulations. Out where we are in San Bernardino County, we are a little bit less regulated on the gray water systems, and there are some kits that you can install after the fact that, you know, are for washer dryer kits and shower kits, but you know, it doesn't do just does those two rooms, so do your bathroom and then your laundry room,
right?
And so those kits are available, but you know, to do a whole house, I think that's a whole different thing, and there's a lot of regulations that are stopping some builders, I think, from going out and trying to, you know, pursue those into the future.
Yeah. There's a company, I don't know if you've ever heard of them, it's called ReWater, and they're up in the Northern California, well, Santa Barbara, I guess, areas. I call it Northern California, but it's not really that far north. But I know the gentleman who's the CEO named Steve Bilson, he helped years ago author a lot of laws about gray water and such. And, you know, he says it could be a great business and people should do it, but yet I don't see tons of builders even thinking. I mean, they think about it, but I don't see any of them do it. But they do want all the EPA WaterSense fixtures in the house. So
yep.
I know it's just another step forward. So this, again, this is not a loaded question, but I love talking because even when I get together, we talk about all kinds of things. If you were nominated or appointed the water czar of California, and I know I wasn't going to tell you about this question, but but I won't trick you into anything here. what would you think is the most important thing that we have to do, or the top three things you would do if you were in charge of water for the whole state? What needs to be done, in your opinion?
Boy. Well, I would probably encourage or lighten some of the regulations on the desal plants that are going in. Mm-hmm. And I would also probably encourage the tunnel to be built within the Delta, because that's a huge issue going forward. That's been a really change the way California water operates, because mm-hmm. that's something we rely on, you know, as an agency for getting our water. I don't know. Beyond that, I think just figuring out a way to reuse water and you know, being a good neighbor when things happen. You know, I think I'm going to tell you a quick story. I know this may not fit really with the Water Czar story, but you heard about all the earthquakes in Trona.
Right.
And they were out of water for a while, and we actually sent some crews up to do some work up there to help them get back online. And I think being able to trade resources and being able to work with each other and not, you know, be more helpful and more of a team, I think that's what we need to do. There's no north versus south. It's just California. And I think that's one of the things that's lost pretty heavily in the water industry.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree with you. I think that's an important thing that should happen. You know, I've been reading up and had some people on our show previously about this atmosphere water collection generation. Okay. And that's getting to be a big thing. I know that some militaries looking into that, where they can, this one company can collect water or generate water from, you know, 15% humidity or 10% humidity. Okay. I think it's an expensive way to do it. I think it takes a lot of time to generate the water, but it's somebody. But it's not the only company that's doing it. There's a lot of people doing it. So I guess it's in this early stage, and just like anything else, like when the I'm older than you, but when the VCR came out, it was like $1,500, or just like when the microwave came out, it was you know, thousands of dollars, and now you can buy a microwave for $29. So I guess like anything.
I'm much younger than you, so we'll go with DVDs.
Oh, okay.
So those were like you know, a couple $1,000 when those came out.
Yeah, that's true. Well, then you'd never had an 8-track or a 4-track cassette deck for your car. Well, we've come a long way in the technology and everything else. But Nick, I didn't mean to throw those extra questions on you, but you and I have conversations all the time, and I love talking with you. And you certainly are a great guy to work with, and you bring a lot of good wealth of knowledge to your water agency. And I hope I know they like you very much. So that's good. Anyway, I hope to see you on the 14th as well, coming to that event. And
I will be there.
All right. And how can anybody reach you if they want to get you or your agency?
Yeah, you can reach me at www.mojavewater.org, uh-huh. or you can reach me at 760-946-7000.
Excellent. Okay, well, Nick, thanks a lot. We're up against our news hour for NBC, so we have to shoot to that. And hope to talk to you soon. And for our listeners, please check into Mojave Desert and Water, and you'll see a lot of things that they do, and get some great ideas, and think about some jobs in the water industry. It's a good thing. And the most important thing everybody has to do this week is keep this world blue. All right? Good night, everybody. On behalf of Chris Davey and myself, have a wonderful week. We'll talk to you next week. Good night.
It's time for NBC Radio News on KCAA Loma Linda. Brought to you by Green Kong Dispensary, the Inland Empire's finest curated medical and recreational dispensary. Google GreenKong.com.